Thank you so much, Mr. President, Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, Excellencies, colleagues, and friends. We stand at a moment of exceptional possibility, a moment when global health and development goals that long seemed unattainable have moved within our reach. A moment also when dangers of unprecedented magnitude threaten the future of humankind. A moment that calls us to shed resignation and routine and rekindle the ambition that has marked the defining chapters of global public health. A generation must rise that will drive poverty from the earth. We can be that generation. A generation must rise that will end the scourge of inequality that divides and destabilizes societies. We can be that generation. A generation must rise that will bring effective health service delivery to every person in every community in every country in the world. We will be that generation, and you, members of this assembly, will lead the way. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic because I know what global health has already achieved, what you have achieved. In 2011, global average life expectancy reached 70 years, a gain of 6 years since 1990. The global child mortality rate has fallen 40% in the same period. In the 10 years since Dr. Lee Jong-wook announced WHO's commitment to support countries in scaling up antiretroviral treatment for AIDS, 9 million people in developing nations have gained access to this life-saving therapy. These are just a few of the milestones of recent progress. I have another reason to be optimistic. I know that global health is guided by the right values. And Dr. Zuma, it was just so striking that you mentioned Alma Ata and your work in Palela Community Clinic, because Sydney Clark and the work in that clinic led to Alma Ata. It was fundamentally the inspiration. And so it's just wonderful to know that you were there at around that time when the inspiration was happening for Alma Ata. At that conference on primary health care, powerful moral and philosophical foundations for our for our work were set. The Declaration of Alma Ata confirmed the inseparable connection between health and the effort to build prosperity with equity, what the Declaration's authors called development in the spirit of social justice. Alma Ata showed the importance of primary health care as a model of health action rooted in the community, responsive to the community's needs, and attuned to its economic, social, and cultural aspirations. Alma Ata set the bar high, but we continue to struggle to provide effective, high-value primary health care to all our citizens. Unfortunately, none of WHO's 140 member states has yet built the perfect healthcare system. We can all get better, and we know it. But in the grand spirit of Alma Ata, we must focus again on the link between health and shared prosperity. And this time, we must turn our loftiest aspirations into systems that build healthier, more productive, more equitable societies. For what Alma Ata did not do was provide concrete plans or effective metrics for delivering on its admirable goals. In many cases, frontline efforts inspired by Alma Ata lack strategy, evidence-based delivery, and adequate data collection. This shouldn't have been surprising, and I'm certainly not criticizing global health leaders of that time. Indeed, many of the architects of Health for All are my heroes to this day. Today, we have resources, tools, and data that our predecessors could only dream of. This heightens our responsibility and strips us of any excuses. Today, we can and must connect the values expressed at Alma Ata to strategy and systems analysis, to what I've been calling a science of delivery, and to rigorous measurement. And we must actually build healthier societies. The setting for this work is a growing movement for universal health coverage. The aims of universal health coverage are to ensure that all people can access quality health services, to safeguard all people from public health risks, and to protect all people from impoverishment due to illness, whether from out-of-pocket payments for health care or loss of income when a household member falls sick. Every country in the world can improve the performance of its health system in the three dimensions of universal coverage: access, quality, and affordability. priorities, strategies, and implementation plans will differ greatly from one country to another. In all cases, countries will need to tie their plans to tough, relevant metrics. And international partners have to be ready to support you. All of us together must prevent universal coverage from ending up as a toothless slogan that doesn't challenge us, force us to change, or force us to get better every day. The good news is that many countries are challenging themselves, measuring outcomes, and achieving remarkable progress. Turkey launched its health transformation program in 2003 to provide access to affordable, quality health services for all. Formal health insurance now covers more than 95% of the population. The health reform is one of a bundle of factors that have contributed to Turkey's health gains. Between 2003 and 2010, Turkey cut its infant mortality rate more than 40%. Thailand's universal coverage reform dates from 2001. The program has substantially increased healthcare utilization, especially among the previously uninsured. And as of 2009, the program had already reduced by more than 300,000 the number of Thai people suffering catastrophic healthcare costs. And let me acknowledge that Thailand launched its universal coverage program against concerns over fiscal sustainability initially raised by my own institution, the World Bank Group, as Dr. Sewat reminds me every time I see him. Thailand's health leaders didn't listen to us and were determined to act boldly to provide access for their whole population. Today, the world learns from Thailand's experience. Many other countries are also advancing, and the growing momentum for universal health coverage coincides with a new chapter in the global fight against poverty. Last month, the organization I lead, the World Bank Group, committed to work with countries to end absolute poverty worldwide by 2030. For the first time, we've set an expiration date for extreme poverty. And we know that fighting absolute poverty alone is not enough. That's why we've set a second goal, and this is also the first time that we've ever done this as an institution. We'll work with countries to build prosperity that's equitably shared by nurturing economic growth that favors the relatively disadvantaged in every society. We'll track income growth among the poorest 40% of the population in every country and work with country leaders to continuously improve policy and delivery so countries can achieve economic progress that's both inclusive and sustainable, socially, fiscally, and environmentally. To end poverty and boost shared prosperity, countries need robust, inclusive economic growth. And to drive growth, they need to build human capital through investments in health, education, and social protection for all their citizens. To free the world from absolute poverty by 2030, countries must ensure that all their citizens have access to quality, affordable health services. This means that today, as never before, we have the opportunity to unite global health and the fight against poverty through action that is focused on clear goals. Countries will take different paths toward the goals. There's no single formula for universal health coverage. However, today, an emerging field of global health delivery science is generating evidence and tools that offer promising options for countries. Let me just give one example. For decades, energy has been spent in disputes opposing disease-specific vertical service delivery models to integrated horizontal models. Delivery science is consolidating evidence on how some countries have solved this dilemma by creating a diagonal approach, deliberately crafting priority disease-specific programs to drive improvement in the wider health system. We've seen diagonal models succeed in countries as different as Mexico and Rwanda. Whether a country's immediate priority is diabetes, malaria control, maternal and child health, and child survival, or driving the end game on HIV/AIDS, a universal coverage framework can harness disease-specific programs diagonally to strengthen the entire system. As countries advance towards universal health coverage, there are two challenges we at the World Bank Group especially want to tackle with you. These two areas are deeply connected to the goals on poverty and shared prosperity I described just a moment ago. First, let's make sure that no family anywhere in the world is forced into poverty because of healthcare expenses. By current best estimates, worldwide out-of-pocket health spending forces 100 million people into extreme poverty every year and inflicts severe financial hardship on another 150 million people. This is an overwhelming form of affliction for people as the anguish of impoverishment compounds the suffering of illness. Countries can end this injustice by introducing equitable models of health financing, along with social protection measures, such as cash transfers for vulnerable households. Second, let's close the gap in access to health services and public health protection for the poorest 40% of the population in every country. Improving health coverage and outcomes among the poorer people of any country is critical to building their capabilities and enabling them to compete for the good jobs that will change their lives. We have to close health gaps if we're serious about reducing economic inequality, energizing countries' economies, and building societies in which everyone has a fair chance. This is my first time up here, so you're welcome to clap at any time during the speech. The issue of point-of-service fees is critical. Anyone who's provided health care to poor people knows that even tiny out-of-pocket charges can drastically reduce their use of needed services. This is both unjust and unnecessary. Thank you. Margaret, do you have a sign that says applause somewhere? Countries can replace point-of-service fees with a variety of forms of sustainable financing that don't risk putting poor people in this potentially fatal bind. Elimination or sharp reduction of point-of-service payments is a common feature of all systems that have successfully achieved universal health coverage. Now, let me tell you five specific ways the World Bank Group will support countries in their drive towards universal health coverage. First, we'll continue to ramp up our analytic work and support for health systems. Universal coverage is a systems challenge, and support for systems is where the World Bank Group can do the most to help countries improve the health of its people. I was recently in Afghanistan, where the Bank Group has been working with the government and other partners to rebuild the country's health system. In Afghanistan, this abstract term, health system, quickly becomes personal. Let me tell one story. Several years ago, Shakiba, a young woman from Parwan province, gave birth at home because there was no health center she could go to. She developed complications and lost her baby. Earlier this year, Shakiba gave birth to another child in the delivery room of a recently opened health center with modern equipment and skilled personnel. Shakiba and her new baby are thriving. Improving health systems literally means life or death for many mothers and children. The number of functioning health facilities in Afghanistan grew more than fourfold from 2002 to 2011. During this time, the country reduced under-5 mortality by more than 60%. Middle-income countries may face very different challenges. Many middle-income countries I visit are suffering from an absolute epidemic of hospital building. In some countries, I've seen brand new, ultra-sophisticated emergency facilities where specialists are preparing to treat, for example, complicated emergencies like diabetic ketoacidosis. But when patients are released from these facilities, they can't get adequate support in the routine daily management of illnesses like diabetes because their primary care system has been starved of financing. It makes no sense to pour resources into responding to downstream complications without investing in upstream prevention and disease management that could often keep those complications from happening in the first place. When countries anchor their health systems in robust primary care and public health protection, healthcare costs can be controlled. We'll work with all countries to do just that. Our second commitment is that we'll support countries in an all-out effort to reach Millennium Development Goals 4 and 5. Reaching these two MDGs is a critical test of our commitment to health equity. We have 954 days left till the end of the Millennium Development Goal period. Now, just for reference, that's 193 days more than we had for all of the 3x5 initiative. And for some of you, that felt like forever. We can do it. 954 days left. We can reach the health targets for the Millennium Development Goals. We have to continue to focus on the MDGs. And even as we prepare for the post-2015 development agenda, the MDGs have given energy and focus to everyone in the global development community, and we've got to finish the job. Last September at the United Nations General Assembly, I announced that the World Bank Group would work with donors to create a funding mechanism to scale up support for MDGs 4 and 5. Since then, we've been expanding our results-based financing for health, focusing on the maternal and child health goals. Our results-based financing fund has leveraged substantial additional resources from the International Development Association, or IDA, the World Bank Group's fund for the poorest countries. This has been an unquestioned success. The trust fund has multiplied resources for maternal and child health. Over the past 5 years, we've leveraged $1.2 billion of IDA money in 28 countries, including $558 million in the 17 countries since last September alone. Now we're working with Norway, the United Kingdom, and other partners to expand the effort. Results-based financing is a smart way to do business. It involves an upfront agreement between funders and service providers about the expected health results. Payment depends on the delivery of outcomes with independent verification. Results-based financing also allows citizens to hold providers accountable. It puts knowledge and power in ordinary people's hands. These programs all have rigorous impact evaluations. In Rwanda, the impact evaluation showed officials that performance incentives not only increased the coverage and quality of services, but also improved health outcomes. The study found that babies were putting on more weight and that children were growing faster. Our third commitment is that with WHO and other partners, the World Bank Group will strengthen our measurement work in areas relevant to universal health coverage. In February, the bank and WHO agreed to collaborate on a monitoring framework for universal coverage. We'll deliver that framework for consultation with countries by the time of the UN General Assembly in September. We don't have enough data. For example, we don't yet measure the number of people forced into poverty by health expenditures in every country each year. We'll work with countries and partners to make sure we get better data so countries can achieve better outcomes. Fourth, we'll deepen our work on what we call the science of delivery. It's a new field that the World Bank Group is helping to shape in response to country demand. It builds on our decades of experience of working with countries to improve services for poor people. As this field matures, it will mean that your frontline workers, the doctors and nurses, the managers and technicians, will have better tools and faster access to knowledge to provide better care for people. Distinguished ministers, as you move towards universal coverage, tell us where you're hitting barriers in delivery. We'll connect you and your teams to global networks of policymakers and implementers who have faced similar problems. We'll mobilize experienced experts from inside and outside the World Bank Group, including from the private sector, where much of the best delivery work happens. Fifth and finally, the World Bank Group will continue to step up our work on improving health through action in other sectors, because we know that policies in areas such as agriculture, clean energy, education, sanitation, and women's empowerment all greatly affect whether people lead healthy lives. Mexico has done an impressive job in this respect. Mexico Seguro Popular, for instance, works in concert with Oportunidades, the cash transfer program. Oportunidades has increased poor people's spending capacity and reduced the depth of poverty, but it's also raised school enrollment and access to health services among the poor. Meanwhile, Seguro Popular has reduced out-of-pocket healthcare payments and catastrophic health expenditures, especially for the poorest groups. All countries can't match Mexico's resources, but promising options for similar types of action exist for all countries. When ministers of health seek to integrate expanded health coverage with efforts to reduce poverty, the World Bank Group's policy advice, knowledge resources, and convening power are at your disposal. For instance, we can help facilitate discussions with ministers of finance. We saw promising steps in this direction at the meeting of African health and finance ministers in Washington last month. But specific actions from the World Bank Group must be part of a wider change in how we work together as a global health community. The fragmentation of global health action has led to inefficiencies that many ministers here know all too well. Parallel delivery structures, multiplication of monitoring systems and reporting demands, ministry officials who spend a quarter of their time managing requests from a parade of well-meaning international partners. This fragmentation is literally killing people. Together, we have to take action to fix it now. Aligning for better results is the approach of the International Health Partnership, or IHP Plus, and it's gaining momentum. Earlier today, Director General Margaret Chan and I took part in an IHP Plus meeting. It's inspiring to see more and more countries take charge, set the agenda based on strong national plans, and making development partners follow the lead of governments. We are reconfirming our shared commitment to IHP Plus as the best vehicle to implement development effectiveness principles and support countries driving for results. But honorable ministers, we must hold each other accountable. We all have to be ready to pound the table and demand that we stop the deadly fragmentation that has hindered the development of your health systems for far too long. The stakes are high and the path will be difficult, but I know we can do it. My friends, together we face a moment of decision. The question is not whether the coming decades will bring sweeping change in global health. The question is not whether the times will bring sweeping changes in global health, development, and the fundamental conditions of our life on this planet. The only question is what direction that change will take. Toward climate disaster or environmental sustainability? Toward economic polarization or shared prosperity? Toward fatal exclusion or health equity? Change will come. It's happening now. The issue is whether we will take charge of change, become its architects rather than its victims. The gravest danger is that we may make decisions by default through inaction. Instead, we must make bold commitments. Since the turn of the millennium, we have experienced a golden age in global health, shaped by the achievements of the leaders in this hall. But will history write that the golden age expired with its hopes unfulfilled, its greatest work barely begun, that it sank under the weight of economic uncertainty and leaders' inability to change, to push ourselves beyond our old limits? We know what the answer must be. The answer that the peoples of all our nations are waiting for, those living today and those yet to be born. We can do so much more. We can bend the arc of history to ensure that everyone in the world has access to affordable, quality health services in a generation. Together, let's build health equity and economic transformation as one single structure, a citadel to shelter the human future. Now's the time to act. We must be the generation that delivers universal health coverage. We must be the generation that achieves development in the spirit of social and environmental justice. We must be the generation that breaks down the walls of poverty's prison and in their place builds health, dignity, and prosperity for all people. Thank you very much.